Welcome to the Gregarious Mammal Podcast. This is Chris, once again here with an interview that we undertook at various conferences around the world, another one from Web Summit here. I do believe we are finally coming to the end of our interviews from summer onwards. It's taken a while to get through them all, and we'll be back with something new soon. But this interview is something quite interesting, quite special. This is an interview we managed to grab with Ben Goertzel, who is the chief scientist at Hanson Robotics, famous for Sophia the Robot, the first robot to become a citizen, the first robot to, I think the first robot, to greet the UN. But also he is the CEO of SingularityNet, which is a blockchain-based artificial intelligence network that will feed the Hanson robots. And this is what he was at Web Summit to mostly talk about. We spoke a little bit about the robots, but also a lot about SingularityNet, how it could function technically and as a business and as influence to artificial intelligence. It was an interesting interview, as is always from conferences. A little bit of background noise here and there. Some people in the background are a lot louder than the people in the foreground sometimes, which is always unfortunate. Did our best to clean up the audio. But it's a fascinating interview, so I hope you manage to get through that background noise to listen to it.
We were wondering, as a sort of opening question, we saw your presentation on the main stage, and at times it looked like the robot surprised you.
Yeah, they surprised me sometimes. I mean, I don't... If it's fully predictable, there's not much fun or much intelligence there, right?
It's true, it's true. Yeah. So do they surprise you often? Or?
Yeah, of course. Okay. I mean, that's the way the AI inside them is constructed. I mean, they're certainly far from a human-level general intelligence or something, but there's enough complexity to the system that what they say at each point depends not just on what you just said, but it depends on the previous context. And there's some random factors in there also.
And I know you were talking about emotions and new emotions that were being developed. How do you account for cultural difference with emotions? I'm thinking maybe, like, I know you live in Singapore.
I live in Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, okay. When I was in Australia, we worked a lot with Asian students at university, and when the some of the women, when they were very embarrassed because they got in trouble or something, they'd laugh. And most people would be horrified. But it's a very...
My wife is mainland Chinese also. So there, I mean, the expression is different culturally, and Sophia is probably more westernized. But I think Asian people express more with the eyes, and westerners do more with the mouth.
Yeah.
And to the extent that she's a learning system, she can adapt to that. So I mean some of her facial expressions were gotten by basically using motion capture camera on people and then trained models, and that was an American girl was the main subject for that. So there's certainly some bias exercise there, but the methodology could be used much more generally, right? So she could adapt. I mean, if we use that software and rolled out a lot of robots in China or something, they would adapt to those patterns of facial expression.
But I know you've mostly
then we can finally understand the facial expressions of Japanese people, which is I can't understand it yet.
How about sarcasm? I mean, I don't know, again, maybe it's an Australian thing, we're terribly sarcastic, and it's even Americans don't always pick up on it. How do you teach those kinds of things?
Well, I think humor is a tricky thing, for sure, and it changes generationally and culturally, right? And I mean, I wouldn't expect an AI without a human body and culture and life to fully appreciate human humor. Like, there's all these your mama jokes or something, right? I mean, the robot doesn't have a mama, so it's going to be quite perplexed by why we think these things are funny.
Some of them are not very funny anymore, either.
No, but people did find them funny at one point, right?
It's a historical kind of, Simon Place, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the robot may have its own forms of humor, which we also don't understand why it thinks they're, it thinks that's funny, right? So,
well, some of the things that Han said were...
Han is off the wall. Yeah. Well, because we fed him a lot of writings from Philip K. Dick.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay.
And David Hansen and I are both big Philip K. Dick fans, so we stuffed his knowledge base with Philip K. Dick's exegesis and other writings, and then he's recombining those things in his own way.
Earlier in the year, I interviewed a sort of technical artist who did an AI project based on Frankenstein, and she found that actually the nicer people were to it, the nicer it became, unlike the monster in Frankenstein, which I found quite fascinating.
Yeah, that's the more direct and simple way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how a human baby or a young child is. It's so, unless somehow you're twisted first, right?
But I know you're here mostly to talk about SingularityNet, and I must admit, I was actually most interested in SingularityNet, and I had no idea that you were connected to it. I had actually no idea that it was the...
Yeah,
it was
the robot grabs everyone's attention, and it's very cool.
Yeah.
But as an AI researcher, to me, that's one interface to the SingularityNet.
And we both actually cover blockchain space a lot. We were both at the Malta Summit as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We actually are friends with Ocean Protocol as well.
Oh, yeah, I've known Trent
because we live in
forever.
Berlin. Their office...
Because Trent was doing AI before getting the blockchain.
Well, their office used to be on our street.
So we knew each other.
Yeah.
We knew each other. I used his software called FFX.
Okay.
Some AI software he built.
Yeah.
We were using that in a machine learning-based hedge fund we made years ago.
Yeah, right.
So. We've known you since the Ascribe days, digital art. But it's an interesting idea because I've actually interviewed a few companies doing this sort of monetization of training data via blockchain, and some of them have often been interesting but without a particularly useful direct use case, whereas the interesting thing with SingularityNet is you have a direct kind of use case into your own machines, even if no one else takes it.
Actually, the use case thing is exactly why we're launching this for-profit spin-off, which is Singularity Studio. So, what I was doing together with Cassio, who's our chief AI officer, from 2001 until last year before we started SingularityNet, we were doing AI consulting for large enterprises and building custom systems. And we were using the revenue from that to fund our AGI R&D, which is sort of a difficult, tedious business in some ways. But on the other hand, it gave us a really good idea of what are the AI needs of big companies in fintech, biotech, and many different industries. So what we're looking at doing now is basically building a bunch of enterprise products, build an enterprise analytics suite with modules for fintech, biotech, IoT, but the back end of that is on the SingularityNet platform, right? And so what that does is that drives demand, it drives usage, because then if we make a product for risk management or we make a product for, clinical trial data analysis, right? We make these modules of the Singularity Studio product, right? And then on the back end, the AI is all calls into agents on the SingularityNet. So then that's driving massive SingularityNet utilization and AGI token utilization. And then that would be the first utility token based project to get massive utilization because we're having all these enterprise software tools back ended on it. But then that can energize the community on the supply side, right? Because then people have a reason. Yeah. They have a reason to put their AI into the platform. Why? Because the AI can then be used by these enterprise software products that are back ending on the platform.
Yeah.
That's what we realized eventually is we're going to have to brute force the demand side of the platform.
Yeah.
Because any platform model, right, you have to get supply and the demand side.
Exactly.
And when altcoins were going up so fast, I just sort of figured wow, we're going to get $1 trillion market cap and then we can use our tokens as bounty to incentivize developers. And then you're driving things on the supply side.
Yeah.
But altcoin market has flattened out a bit. bit,
which I think is a positive.
That's fine. I mean, it's not a positive for me personally. No, it might be a positive for the ecosystem. What it means is we need to juice things up on the demand side instead. So we're creating this for-profit spin-off, and then we'll get enterprise software use
to kickstart it.
So we're basically going to big companies and saying we're going to do a deal which is partly AI consulting work, where we help you figure out how you need to use AI to solve your problems, and then part of the revenue is you're going to buy AI services on this platform. They'll pay fiat currency, and then on the back end it's converted into AGI token. But then, so by the end of 2019, we should see a lot of AGI token utilization coming from the back end of these enterprise products, and then that's going to be something unseen in the altcoin market
so far, right?
Because you're getting the utility token actually being used.
And this
will be interesting, because the altcoin token speculation community won't know what to make of that, right? They're very unfamiliar. Like, actual utilization of a platform is a very unfamiliar thing.
I think in the subjective use,
I write a lot about data monetization, particularly in IoT. That's one of my main areas. I mean, how do you see the data being monetized by both the people, the enterprise customers, and also your open source community?
Well, that's going to be very different in different verticals, right? So, I mean, in fintech, you know, people who have their own data, people who have their own proprietary data aren't going to, they want to monetize it by using it within their own business model. They will use our AI tools on essentially paying for the AI services, and their data remains theirs. And one of the things we're going to do in the Singularity Studio spinoff is enable hybrid cloud usage of Singularity. So you can have a sub-network on-premise, and then you have the public version. You have interoperation between them, right? But on the other hand, in health tech, there's more interesting possibilities. Like, we're partnering with Shivam, which is a blockchain genomics project. They did an ICO in February, and I mean, there you have interesting possibilities. Like, someone could put their genomic or other medical data online, encrypted, and with their own private key, and then, you know, they can open up that data for a fee to some research project, right? So we're talking to Consense, which is another blockchain-based company doing clinical trials. And so there you have a more interesting decentralized story, right? So, yeah, I think we want to be open to both those cases. Like, I mean, you know, if a big insurance company wants to use our platform for AI underlying, you know, estimating catastrophic risk or something, and they want to keep all the data proprietary on-premise, but they're still using our platform, you know, that's utilization of the platform. It's money. It's good. On the other hand, of course, we're especially interested in applications that leverage the decentralized aspect of the platform. So we're talking to these guys in Africa about estimating basically credit risk for the unbanked. So you give a credit score to people who don't have a bank account, but I mean, they may have paid their phone bill on time. They may have had a steady job for a while. So that's a machine learning application, and there your data is coming from, you know, big companies and government agencies.
In regard to that, I mean, do you see people, maybe I'm not putting it right, but sharing the data across the disparate verticals? Like, you think of something, it could be anything from healthcare to autonomous vehicles to create something bigger.
Certainly will happen. Yeah. So, I mean, one obvious way that happens is in sort of reputation scoring. Because if an AI agent or a provider or an average person, if you want to assign some like transparent, openly defined reputation score for that person, where the credit score for the unbanked is one among many examples, I mean, that spans many different walks of life, and it should be a multidimensional reputation also. But health is another thing there. So I'm very very interested in biomarkers of longevity because I do research on AI applied to longevity biology.
Yeah. Mm.
So, and that, but that touches insurance, right? Because if you get a bunch of biomarkers of longevity measured, and if your car says that you drive safely, and if your home service robot can validate that you don't shoot up heroin all day or something, right? And then, I mean, then perhaps.
And you walk your dog every day, so.
Well, then you can get a discount on health or life insurance, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing is, so this should all be data that you own and control.
Yeah, exactly.
If you could get a discount from that data, you may well choose to make it available.
But it's up to you to get that discount.
It should be up to you to get that discount.
You probably saw in Seattle there's a coffee shop now at a university where you can get free coffee if you supply your data to
a
recruiter.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
I did not see that.
That's kind of clever in a way because if you're a student graduating, that's strategic.
Get you in the system early.
depending what data you're sharing, could be an
issue.
Yeah, that you could easily see
some
that going in a bad direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, social credit and stuff like that.
I had some more technical questions I wanted to dig into, but I know you had a question around like quality of data before I get into those details.
Yeah, I mean, how do you make sure the data you're receiving is not corrupted or problematic or fictitious for that matter?
Well, in the end, we can't do that 100%. So there's two layers to that. So, I mean, having an AI-driven reputation and rating system is going to be critical, where the role of the AI there initially is to sort of scan for reputation fraud of various types. And then ultimately, the AI can do predictive rating based on machine learning from other ratings. But then also, I think in doing the product design, we're having to distinguish the underlying, like, purely decentralized protocol and then the marketplace user interface that we're building. Because to list something on a marketplace user interface that we create, we're vouching for it in some sense, and there will be different legal requirements in different jurisdictions regarding what you can list. So we need to check. I mean, we're still more like Google Play Store than Apple App Store or something. Like, I mean, we don't want to curate things very, very heavily, but we can't allow like Joe's child porn app or something.
Yeah, that was one of my questions.
On the other hand, but the underlying decentralized protocol, anyone could use, and so it's open source.
That's true.
Anyone could put a Docker container on their server, and they could announce to the world, like, "Hey, we're here. Find our like money laundering API or drug dealing API version 7.6." We're not endorsing that, right? But it is an open decentralized protocol. So there's the marketplace user interface, which we have to curate just for legal reasons. Then there's the underlying decentralized protocol, which we're making completely free and open.
So this actually you led into some of the questions I wanted to ask. So you spoke about already a little bit about hybrid cloud, because in your presentation you mentioned cloud-based, which initially to me was a bit of a flag against decentralized, because whilst the skeptic also could ask where are a lot of Bitcoin and Ethereum hosts located, but that's another conversation.
Well, Ethereum is probably run by Xi Jinping at the moment.
On AWS, maybe. But anyway, it's just like, so who knows? But so you're going for the kind of model of people can host wherever they want.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a balance here between being philosophical purists and wanting to win the AI race against big governments and $1 trillion companies, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, Linux has had a similar philosophical
battle,
right?
You have to be realistic sometimes.
And you have folks like Richard Stallman,
true
philosophical purists. And it's great that he exists. He's an awesome human being.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if everyone was like him, Linux would not have flourished to the extent that it had, right?
Exactly.
We'd still be in like GNU herd land instead of
in a university
Linux
somewhere.
Land, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I think we need to have a pure open source protocol that's truly decentralized and no one can own or control, and that should be there, and that may have utility for the human race in all sorts of ways that we don't even know yet,
right?
Just like Linux has utilities that Linus and Richard didn't ever foresee. But on the other hand, if we really want to, you know, obsolete Google and Facebook and Tencent from the AI market, as they obsoleted Wang and IBM and the mainframe companies, I mean, clearly we need massive utilization, and we need big companies to be utilizing the platform, and then we need to do things in a way that they're
comfortable with. Try to get them to exchange their information.
You can still have the purely decentralized platform underneath, right? But then on top of that, you need a sort of bespoke layer that provides enterprise users with what they want. And you need to support hybrid cloud utilization. Now, I think things are going, you know, full on cloud. But right now, a pharmaceutical company won't take all their data and put it there, right?
Or just spreading yourself across different providers, even.
The thing is, so about that, like our beta platform is going to be on AWS and a bit of Google Cloud, and I mean we're experimenting with Tencent, but we're using APIs of these big cloud providers for various purposes. On the other hand, that can't be our long-term plan, right? So I mean, we're also working on replicating all the API calls we use from these big cloud providers, and I mean stuff like OpenStack is really helpful. We're not using that in the beta, but we're experimenting with it a lot. And I mean, so Kubernetes, OpenStack, all these things. The goal with that, not for the beta, but a little bit after, I mean, the goal is anyone who sets up a server farm can, you know, put SingularityNet on it. And that could be within a big company's infrastructure, or it could be, for example, a crypto miner who isn't making that much money mining Ethereum or Bitcoin anymore. So, hey, they can run an AI hosting farm.
Mine some health data instead.
They can get AGI token rewards for that, but they can also just get like service fee for, in essence, operating these AI nodes, and that's going to be big, also.
That's cool. But
digging lower down the stack, what blockchain are you using, or what blockchain?
It's Ethereum at the moment.
Okay.
And the thing is, almost all expensive operations occur off-chain.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is what everyone's doing.
And then you're using an off-chain protocol, or just traditional off-chain?
It's traditional. It's our own. Yeah. So I mean, when a new AI agent comes into the network, that goes in the blockchain. If one leaves, it goes in the blockchain. If one agent rates another as good or bad or something, then that goes in the blockchain. And of course, money processing, payment processing stuff is all is recorded in the blockchain. On the other hand, if one AI sends data to another or says, "Hey, will you answer this question?" Yeah, sure. That doesn't have to go on the blockchain. So like as an example, one agent and another can enter into a contract for a whole bunch of different API calls over a long period of time. Then that contract is done. Then all those API calls can happen without bothering the blockchain about it.
Yeah, for sure. Because that was playing onto my mind about the whole speed issue, of course, if you're trying to get data to Sophia.
No, I mean,
it's not coming straight from there.
Whether we'll stick with Ethereum blockchain for the long haul, I have no idea, honestly. We built it, so it's not a big software change. Yeah. Move to a different blockchain if we want to. But everyone asks, like, are you going to build your own blockchain? Yeah. What blockchain are you going to move to next year? But honestly, those are not among the harder questions.
No, we're focusing. Sure. No.
There's a lot of nastier questions. I mean, the questions that are more annoying are like, you have someone else's AI agent, which has a persistent state. And it crashes, but someone is using it. Then what do you do? Did you have are you storing the persistent state? Because that has many answers, because you want to support an AI agent that just keeps its own persistent state in a proprietary way. On the other hand, you also want to make tools that agents could use to save their state, and then you provide a service of like restart from the last safe state, right?
This was a thought that
came into
mind.
So there's a lot of stuff like that, which is is hard, yeah. Which blockchain to use really isn't hard in the end.
This was a thought that came into my mind during our talk, actually, of like, if you have connected devices, if some go online and offline about, yeah. I mean, it's not a new problem. Distributed systems and state is not a new problem.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So if you have a computer science background, like my wife has a PhD in computer science. She knew nothing about blockchain or cryptocurrency and just thought it was like...
But you still understand
mayhem of idiots trading things and speculation in the market. Right? But when I got into it, then she read a bit about it. She's like, well, so I mean, she knew how cryptography works, and she knew distributed systems, and then like if you know those things, it's a very thin layer on top of that.
I spent a lot of my time telling people in the blockchain space that a lot of what we're working on is not new. You should go back and learn some of the lessons.
No, it's all what you learn in graduate school in computer science. And honestly, the consensus algorithms haven't yet caught up with distributed systems. Of course, having computer that are fast enough to do all this across the internet is amazing, right? And we never had that. Yeah. But there are many more cutting edge problems in operating this sort of platform than the blockchain. I mean, homomorphic encryption is subtle, and I've been working on that a bit, because if you want to have data that can be operated on in a secure way using advanced learning algorithms without leaking that data to people that the owner doesn't want leaked to, that's very tricky. You know the company Numerai, right?
No.
That's one of the most interesting blockchain companies out there. They're really doing something.
There's lots of them.
So I'm not working with them at all. I have no connection with them.
So
they have a hedge fund.
Okay.
So basically, you take financial time series and you homomorphically encrypt them in a way that allows someone else to apply a predictive algorithm to that time series and get a prediction, but without knowing what the original time series was.
Actually, I have interviewed them and I've forgotten, or interviewed another company doing something very similar.
Well, Syndicator does something like that.
Maybe
we'll
I have interviewed them.
But Numerai has been doing it longer.
I've done quite a lot of interviews recently, and a lot of them I have a bit behind with.
So like with medical data, if you want to supply your genomics data to be analyzed, but in a way that wouldn't let people identify it was your genomic data, that's a problem. Like, how do you scramble the data in a way that lets the AI do its thing and just learn what it needs to learn without revealing the data? So we can do that now, but the encryption works differently depending on what AI algorithm you're using. It's actually quite complicated. There's no good way to do homomorphic encryption with deep neural nets now, but we can do it with a logic system, because we can do it for like Andor and not operators. So there's a lot of tricky things, and no one has gotten so there's homomorphic encryption, there's multi-party computation where different bits of the computer can go on different machines, so nobody has the full story, and then the answer is produced, and no one ever saw enough of the data to do any damage,
which in theory would be a wonderful thing you could accomplish with something like Ethereum if it was a little faster.
You can do that all. That's about. You can do that all off chain.
I know. It's the problem.
There will be massively faster blockchains.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
There already are some, like the claim to be. We'll see if...
I haven't tested anything yet that really is actually available to download and try, though.
Yeah, this is half the problem. They always say, we're very fast. Like, do you have anything we can try? No. Well, I don't know.
That's... It's a solvable problem. Yeah. In 5 years, it'll be solved. Yeah. But it's not easy, because the thing is, distributed systems didn't have to deal with as many adversarial actors doing as many nasty things, right?
Because they were usually more close.
EOS may be fast, but that's basically
as was revealed in the past.
That was obvious from the beginning. If you read their white paper, did not make a secret of how central it is, really.
I think we did read their white paper, and maybe that was half the problem. We didn't really understand what the point was, and maybe that was half of the problem, is the white paper made no real secret of it. We were trying to find something that wasn't there.
I mean, the secret is it can be fast by being more more centralized.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, it's different than having a company control it, because it is democratic among the block producers and they're elected and so on.
Yeah, it's interesting.
From a governance view, it's innovative, but not necessarily that well thought out still, right?
No, it gets into grey areas here where we start to talk about the centralization of decentralization.
Well, but that the world is, it inevitably will be a bit like that, right?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
I mean, like Linux is central. I mean, the kernel team is like an oligarchy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but yet, the fact that it's open means if the kernel team became incompetent, another kernel team could pop up, right?
Yeah,
just exactly. Like if Ethereum becomes incompetent, you can hard fork.
Yeah,
right? And that, I mean that.
Yeah,
you can't to hard fork like a country is a lot harder. Right? You have to start shooting people.
It certainly happened. That's for sure.
It's violent.
Anyway, we're getting off onto a tangent, but this is something I have thought about a lot in the past. Do you have any final questions, maybe?
I know you've been working in the digital citizenship space in Malta. Why Malta?
Because they're interested.
Yeah.
I mean, why is Sophia a citizen of Saudi Arabia? Because the Saudi government said, hey, let's do this.
Because they offered.
Yeah,
really.
I mean, the leader of Malta is interested to have his government ministers work with us on defining an AI citizenship test. And I mean, Donald Trump hasn't approached me about it.
I would have expected maybe Estonia, because they're pretty progressive in this.
Maybe they will now. It should be.
They're the one I would have thought of first.
The European citizen, then, as well.
That's going to be the challenge.
Oh, no, Malta is European, so no.
That's going to be the problem. Yeah. Like getting citizenship proposal through the EU bureaucracy.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting AI challenge to read a legal code and then figure out how to apply it to a video or something. Like, what does the law say about the scene you just watched?
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting AI puzzle. And in a way, it's a problem AI should learn to solve just to go around in the world autonomously. They need to know if they're breaking the law or not.
There was a talk from people from the BBC where they had a block of time where they let an AI schedule the channel based on their archive. And the BBC has a lot of archive. And it was quite fascinating because it would tend to draw patterns that humans would not draw and end up being somewhat, in our eyes, random, because why would we watch that show followed by that show? But the AI had seen a taxi, so decided that something else with a taxi made sense. And it was quite fascinating to watch it, because what they saw in the patterns is not something we would see in the patterns.
And so that may not be why you were watching the show.
No, of course not.
I can't remember which country it was, but I saw yesterday there was someone doing for border control, border crossing, bringing out a lie detector test based on a computerized lie detector test, where it would monitor people's, obviously the facial recognition, but also their tone of voice, different metrics.
Those must work very badly.
Terrifying.
<Yeah. laughs>
What could go wrong?
I mean, in China now, in Shenzhen, not just that, but when you walk across the street in Shenzhen, you can see in a big screen your face on the screen with a little bounding box around it, and they saw you were jaywalking, and they'll put that in the database somewhere.
And on that note, let's
but we're not doing that. Our goal is to use AI
for
nice, compassionate, friendly, beneficial applications.
And that was our interview with Ben Goertzel of Hanson Robotics and SingularityNet. If you have enjoyed the show, please find previous shows and show notes at gregariousmammal.com/podcast. Support the show with merchandise and great t-shirts or donations at gregariousmammal.com/support. Wherever you listen to this show, we are now available in at least half a dozen networks. Please rate, share, comment, review, and just generally share the love. And until next time, whenever that may be, thank you very much for listening.